wanna be my friend, you had better go and get a pen. And maybe we could keep in touch, like they did in the old days, it wasn't so long ago.
Pen pals.
Hello.
Ah, so much butter.
Hi, pen pals. How are you? Today is a special, fun episode.
We got a first-time event happening on this still very new podcast.
I'm not wearing pants.
Pen pals, Daniel Vaniel, not wearing pants, and we have our very first guest ever, ladies and gentlemen, Reggie Watts.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome. You're a pen pal.
You're a pen pal.
I'm a pen pal.
Yes.
I'm a pen pal.
I'm pen pal.
I'm pen pal.
So glad you're here, man.
I am too. This is really great.
It's just great.
It's comfortable.
We're just talking to people.
It feels like a hot tub.
It feels like you just slid it.
Like we were just at the hotel hot tub. And yeah. And you just jumped right in.
Hey, guys, y'all mind if I just slip in here for a second?
Oh, get on in.
Get on in.
My balls have been so itching, I just need to get a little relief.
Yeah, let the water get to them. Let the water get on them.
We didn't build this thing to look at. You didn't buy it? No, we built it.
No, we built it to fix ball diseases and such words.
Perfectly safe.
So you're here.
I am.
So glad to have you on. As you already know, it's everyone else's podcast. We just talk about it. And today you are doing that with us.
Uh-huh.
We have
pretty great letters.
We have great letters. We have three of them.
But also, I think, is this a third first time? Is this the first time we're bringing someone back into the fray?
Yes. A lot of firsts today.
A lot of firsts today. Yeah, yeah.
So thank you to everybody who sends us our letters at the Pen Pals Pod on Instagram and Twitter and the Pen Pals Pod at Gmail. And you go back if you want to hear the address, or I'll give it to you later.
Should we hop over to Letter Corner?
Just do it. Yeah,
let's skip over to Letter Corner.
Well, it feels good over here.
Ooh.
I like it.
Good skip.
I like it.
I did one big two-footed jump.
I just walked.
Just see what's... Oh, here's all the letters.
Oh, okay.
Here,
can I have one of those?
Pass
me
one of those.
Everybody get one?
Guys, I just found this.
Daniel
Van Kirk.
Here we go. This is sent in from Phil Kajak.
Kajak.
I still don't know how to say.
Phil Kajak.
I think it was one of our first letters, wasn't it?
It was one of the first. I think it was the very first.
And that's how Pen Pals works.
Yeah.
He sent us a letter. We audibly sent him back one.
Oh, you're actually falling through on
that
concept.
And now he's sending us another one. Yes.
This is crazy.
He's sending us another letter. He has sent us another letter.
That's insane.
Yeah.
This is like for real.
I know. I just hope Phil goes face to face. Here we go. Dan and Rory.
Yeah.
Again, knows how to put the order of names.
Not right, but that's okay.
Thanks for reading my letter on the first episode of Pen Pals. My name is pronounced Kajak.
Wrong again.
Phil Kajak. That's his opinion.
Kajak. I'll steal your keys.
But the official Polish pronunciation is Kajak.
Ooh.
So Rory technically wins. I do not like this letter.
I already love it.
Also, while I appreciate you thinking I'm a possible member of the Hole in the Ground gang, if you guys don't know what we're talking about, go back and listen to that afterwards. You don't need to have heard that, though, to get into this one. AKA the Coffee Cup Gang. That's from us. It's sadly not true. Otherwise, I would have sold the movie rights a long time ago. I think your Wayne Fetterman theory of him being one of the robbers of the Hole in the Ground gang has some legs. I agree. Wayne is probably a criminal. All right, let's get to it. Here we go, Reggie.
Here we go. Here it is.
In August of 2001, I saw Radiohead in Grant Park, pre-Lollapalooza. So Phil's kind of bragging. In 93-degree heat. I was about 30 feet from the stage, and it was hot and crowded and gross. After the event, staff sprayed us with a fire hose to cool us down, shot as an arc into the crowd. I know. A guy next to me had a seizure, picked himself up, and walked himself to the medical tent saying, "I'm fine," as he walked away. I like that guy.
Still having the seizure.
I'm fine. His friend told me that, quote, "This happens all the time, and not to worry. This has nothing to do with the rest of the story. It's just fascinating."
Side note, his friend told me this happens all the time, meaning the friend kind of stuck around to see Radiohead while his friend having a seizure dealt with himself.
You're not going to go, Phil's like, you're not going to go with your friend.
It happens all the time.
Didn't you hear him say he's fine?
Yeah. Pass me another wine cooler over there.
Then a few minutes later, so now the guy, seizure guy's left. Then a few minutes later, an 11-year-old kid appeared next to our group of friends alone.
Bing.
He told us that he really wanted to see Radiohead, so he took the Metra from the suburbs, what? I want to say Naperville, by himself, stood in line all day in the heat, and this was his first concert. The only downside is that he was too short to see anything. Oh. So we did what was right and promised the kid that we'd periodically lift him up into the air to make sure he could see, which we did every few songs. Every time we'd lift him up, he'd scream and cheer like it was the pinnacle of his life. He was 11, Phil, it was. After the show was over, he thanked us profusely and went back to the train. This is still one of my favorite concert stories. Every so often, I'll be at a show and wonder whatever happened to this kid. And I just hope that that experience encouraged him to fully embrace live music and keep seeing shows. Nice. This made me wonder. What are your best concert stories? On your first episode, you mentioned that you both see a lot of shows, so I'm guessing Rory had some adventures during those solo Fist shows, and Dan probably has a story about the Riv or Aragon in Chicago. Take care, Phil Keyjack.
Kayak.
All right, and Reggie, you probably do as well.
I got one.
Okay.
I've been. This is where Reggie confesses he's been to one concert.
Sorry, guys.
Guys, okay. I know you would think it, but I just don't enjoy music.
Yeah. No.
I mean, I've been to shows, just not many concerts.
There's like one time in your life you walked out and you're like, that was a concert.
Yeah. So I was like, hey, did it.
Yeah.
Never have to see one again.
I do have a great story.
Do it.
This is how great Phil is. Phil, yeah. You're such a great pen pal. All of the people who send us in letters are. But Phil, he specifically says Dan probably has a story about the Aragon in Chicago. The year is 2000. I go to the Aragon Ballroom with my college girlfriend's roommate.
Okay.
To see Creed.
Shut it down.
Yes.
Can you take me higher?
Okay. Now, there's a general admission area. I love the music. Thank you, Reggie Watts. I love the music. I walk in. There's a general admission, like the whole ground floor of the thing. And then there's like the balcony area.
Sure.
I'm up in the balcony watching Creed.
Yeah.
They're like halfway through Pity for a Dime.
Yeah.
So I'm a Pity for a Dime. And I look over and next to me, there is a girl facing the stage, sitting down on a guy's lap, and they are straight fucking.
At Creed?
What? Yes.
What row?
Balcony, front row.
Yeah,
like
you can
little...
only do that in the balcony.
Right, right.
That's balcony behavior right there.
And you know how those, like...
B behavior.
That's BB. That's BB. Classic BB
classic
right
BB.
There.
And you know how, like, those classic, like, orchestra, whatever, symphony style, like, the balcony kind of, like, butts out a little bit, like in an arc. So, so there's nobody in front of them, and they're kind of like out into their own, unless you're also at one of those other little things
next to
them. So I look over, and she's just, so my pity, just going to town, right? And I look, now I'm no longer watching the show. I'm a 20-year-old kid.
You're watching another show.
I'm watching a whole other show. I look over, the guy sees me, and with both hands, he goes, what, man? And I'm like, you're having sex.
You yelled that back?
And he goes, you don't need to watch. And I go, you don't need to do it. And I watched the whole time.
With arms wide open.
And every once in a while, he would like look over and see me still watching. I'm like, I am here.
Yeah,
man.
I'm here. I'm watching you.
Wow.
I'm watching what you're doing.
Oh, the Aragon. The Aragon.
Like, what is that called if you're like the Mile High Club on a plane? If you're fucking at a concert.
And it's Creed.
Balcony crew? No, I don't know.
Balcony team?
Balcony team.
You're balcoming.
The 40-foot club?
The 40 feet. I'm 40 feet crew.
Hey.
What's that mean? I had sex on a balcony at a Creed show in Chicago.
Whoa.
Where were your seats? In the balcony?
In the balcony at the Aragon Ballroom.
Yeah.
Man, I don't have anything like that.
No?
I have going to see the Allman Brothers
Almond?
At the Beacon. The Almond. not the same. But I'll tell you what, they sing a lot about a healthy diet and nuts that actually provide a lot of protein.
Okay, good.
The Almond Brothers.
Just a handful will do ya. Just a handful is fine.
All right, now we're going to play Almond Latte, which I think we all know is our only hit.
So give me some of that almond milk.
Yeah. Dear, dear, dear. Sweet almond. Went to see Almond Brothers at I can't not say the date.
I know.
In at the Beacon Theater in New York City. And they threw, strange enough, they threw cashews at us during the show.
Irony.
The right. Irony of that.
Although, smart move by the cashew industry to get behind the Almond Brothers.
Got super high, was with my buddy. His dad was a cop.
How old are you?
I walked up to go to the bathroom, saw some guys smoking a joint. It was a sophomore year in college.
Okay.
I hit the joint, saw him, my buddy going to the bathroom. I go, Jack, get over here. He smokes the joint. We go back and sit down and we're watching the concert. His dad is like saying something to him. I'm on the other side. And at the intermission, his dad looks at me and he goes, did you smoke pot with my son? And for some reason, my brain was like, if I answer sarcastically, I am telling the truth. So I go, yeah.
Smart.
Yeah, I smoked pot with your son.
Yes, officer.
Yeah, in my head, I'm like, there, you told the truth. You did say yes. It's his interpretation.
Yes.
As soon as they started the second set, his dad looks at me and goes, when I retire, I'm going to smoke a joint this long. He was like so happy that we were high. I was terrified.
For the listeners at home, Rory put his fingers 40 feet apart.
Yeah, and I was like, sir, there's no joint. That's not a joint.
I'm smoking.
And you
it.
Can't smoke all that. And why would you want to?
Because no. I'm retired.
You hit a peak of highness. You can't go high. You can't. Creed's wrong. You can't go higher.
So he, when you, yeah. when you were.
Someone can't be taken higher.
They no. can't, you can't. They can't. You can't. Once can't. You're high, you're high.
Yeah, you're high.
You're yeah. High.
Okay.
I like that. So when you said, yes, officer, I'm high right now. I got high.
Yeah.
Did he just be like, okay. And then he knew you were lying. Like, you were
he did. He
tucky.
Did play it
he
off.
Probably he
was
saw
like,
right. you, right?
He didn't care.
And then he just waited till later to be like, look.
He was making us drink on the way to the show. None of us are 21.
Sounds
he was
like a
making
cop.
Us drink.
Sounds like a cop.
Super cop oriented behavior. Cop. Drink yeah. it now.
When I worked at a bar,
Budweiser,
when
too.
I worked at a bar in downtown LA, the most rowdy people we would always have were cops.
Yeah.
Like off duty cops.
Of course.
Because they're like, what, guys? We're call whoever you want.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We're us.
Yeah, exactly. Call us.
It's like, no, that would be great. They go to call 911 and the guy picks up a phone and says, yeah. hello.
Yeah, I'm at the show. What row? I'll just come over and hang out.
Is this 911?
You got shooters?
Yeah.
Not those kind of shooters.
Come on, man. Back off. Come on.
Come
you know
on. Anyway. Now that I got you on the phone, bartender, yeah, can I get a Rumple Mitz down here?
Rumple, yeah, they're ordering horrible drinks.
Rumple Mitz.
Yes. Anyways, we'll take some peach schnapps.
And some
mixed with Michelob Ultra.
Some Goldschlager. Give me some Goldschlager. I want to drink Goldschlager.
I saw Tool at the Grady Cole Center in Charlotte, North Carolina in 1996, I
Damn,
think.
Damn, yo.
And that is like a YMCA gym. That's the size
really?
Of that
That's
place.
What I was going to say. The other
crazy.
Thing about this, whether Reggie, whether or not you have a crazy story or whatever, I'm sure we all have stories about what this kid's experience. Imagine an 11-year-old kid
oh,
who's like,
mind
I'm getting
blowing.
On the commuter train.
Yeah.
I'm going, he's 11 years
Just
old.
Just by himself?
Yes. He was. They said he was all by himself.
How did he get in?
That's what they never. He said, I still think about this
My
kid.
My daddy's inside.
He's no, an
can't
angel.
Can we fucking see this show?
Yeah. And
that
then
kid was an angel.
And then he asked them to like hold him up on his their shoulders every once in a while so he could see the show.
Yes.
He's like, he was the most punk rock kid
That's
at
amazing.
This Radiohead show. But I think we all probably have like moments where like, this is. Can I tell you guys what my first concert was ever?
Yes.
Yeah.
United Center in Chicago, Amy Grant.
I love
That's
that.
The
Amy
first
Grant.
Concert I ever, and
Great
it
choice.
Rocked.
My
Great
first
choice.
My first concert, Furman University, Paladin Stadium, New Kids on the Block.
Yes.
Whoa.
Yeah. Right, this is why
New
we're
The 80s, guys. The
Whoa,
80s.
The 80s. I mean, 80s, sorry. 80s. My first concert was Missoula, Montana.
Okay.
Fugazi.
Ooh. See, that one.
That was fun.
Yeah, you win.
That's good for the resume.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, when people, it's weird because sometimes I've almost not gotten jobs. And I'm like, no, read a little bit further
Keep
down.
Going. Wait, your first concert was Fugazi?
Oh, we're going to fire somebody to hire
me. Let me make a position available.
I never did like our president.
Tom, come into the office. What was your first concert? Well, I saw Milli
Almond.
Vanilli. All right, you're fired.
Right. You know what my first CD was?
What?
It was 1993 or 4. And my mom had gotten me a component CD player, like part of the stereo
system. Can we guess? Is it rock and roll?
Nope. My grandma walks into Walmart. Uh-oh. And she goes...
MC Hammer.
Nope. She goes, I want to get my son a CD. He's getting a CD player for Christmas. And the guy goes, all right, well, this is like the most popular CD right now. No, remember back, I was like, it wasn't even what the content was. He's like, this is the most popular CD right now. And she's like, do you think he'll like it? And he's like... I mean, yeah.
I can't imagine the most popular.
It's the most popular CD.
What was it?
And if it's 94, which I think it was, it is by far the most popular CD album of that year.
Nirvana.
Mm-mm. Uh-uh. Nah, that'd be too cool.
Okay. All right.
You ready?
What was it?
Okay.
The Bodyguard soundtrack.
What?
What? And I rocked it out.
Honey, I wanted to get you something now that you have a CD player.
They said it was the most popular CD. They could barely keep them in stock.
And I hope you were like, obviously it is. I can't even rip it open fast enough.
Dude, I loved it. Queen of the Night. I listened to every song on
You that. Had to. It was the only CD you had.
I know.
How old were you?
Probably 14 years old.
So you're just like, what is this shiny technology?
I loved
Look,
it.
It glints
I'm
in a laser.
Queen of the Night. Whitney just crushing it, getting carried around by Kevin Costner.
I'm going to download that now.
Yeah. Oh, it was so good. I loved I Will Always Love You.
Of
that
course.
Dolly Parton song.
Of course.
Song.
I mean, Dolly Parton, come on.
I know.
DP.
Legend.
Dolly P.
Legend.
Yeah. I just think of this kid. That was a good letter, Phil.
Thanks, Phil. Wonder what happened to that kid. I do.
I know. If I was Phil, too, I would think about that kid all the time. Now, I guess, why concern yourself with the man who has multiple seizures and doesn't have to seem good friends? Don't worry about him.
You know, every time I'm at a concert, I never care about the guy who might have died that night. All I do is care about the kid who maybe has negligent parents.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Because they're possibly the future.
Rory, nothing makes me happier when we do the show than when you end a sentence with the joke I was going to say too. I'm like, Rory did it.
And that's
mind
reading.
I don't even have to tag it.
I'm a mind reader.
All right, that was our first letter. Thank you, Phil. Sincerely, Daniel Van Kirk.
Reggie Watts.
And?
Rory Van Kirk.
Damn it, Rory. Oh. Welcome back.
Folks, welcome back.
Yeah, what a break.
Thank you for listening.
Wasn't that a good break?
That was a real good break.
It felt good to me.
I don't know what you guys did, but we did a lot of breathing exercises and we stretched.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was wondering why you kept handing me a part of a Kit Kat bar. And then I was like, oh, okay.
To challenge you.
Yeah.
To see if you'd take it.
Okay.
See if you're a lefter or a rider.
I was a lefter. Oh, no, I'm good.
Do you want
any water? No, I'm good. It's too weird.
Or a
rider. It's weird looking water.
That's a weird water.
Right.
It's a weird water.
They were like, just put the water in those bottles.
It looks like a droid.
Put it in a droid. Actually, put it in a droid.
Yeah. Okay.
Have you guys tried that Wally water? That's my best joke of the episode.
R2-D3.
Okay, now part of the great thing of having another pen pal in the studio with us is we told people ahead of time to send you some letters.
Yes.
Do you have one from the letter pal? Should we go over to the letter pal?
Let's go to the letters.
All right, here we are. Take it away, Reggie.
Now, Reggie, I see, is picking a letter from a stack of 100,000 letters.
That was a lot of DMs. Okay.
I came prepared. Okay, so here it is. I found it. This is from Instant Grams.
Great.
Or, I'm sorry. I mean, it was taken from there.
Oh,
that's right.
Okay.
It says, Reggie, to my dearly beloved pen pals, Rory, Daniel, Vaniel, Canyel, and Reggie.
First of all, they didn't. It's DVK.
Yeah.
And they went with a C.
Yeah.
I know.
And the order's all off.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks, Rory. You agreed with me. You said I said the order was.
Shit.
I agreed too.
Oh, shit.
Just so you
thanks,
know.
Thanks,
I thought
Reggie.
You were going along a path where all we have to do is say yeah, but you threw us a curveball.
We do a lot of that in here. A lot of curveballs, a lot of yes.
Yeah. Okay, it says, guys, hey, so nice to talk to you, Reggie. Remember when we smoked weed at the Walker in Minneapolis at the AIGA conference? That was so cool.
Do you remember that?
I actually do.
Oh, wow.
As I was reading it.
Is that what you really do?
As I was reading it, I was prepared. My default is that I'll never remember.
Yeah.
You know, right. So, but as I was reading it, I was like, oh, no. I remember AIGA and I remember The Walker.
Was this somewhat recent?
It's somewhat recent. Yeah. It was within the last year.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's great. It's, you know, it's in the Midwest. It's great. That was cool. My question for all of you. What do you do when you feel stuck? Stuck creatively or geographically or financially, whatever the case may be. That moment that overcomes you where you're just like, fuck, where do I go from here? Sincerely, Carly.
Thanks, Carly.
That's Carly Simon. Who's been right. We got a lot of names.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
Big.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Yeah. We got some big hitters writing us.
Yeah. Someday, we have a letter from Rob Ewell that someday we're going to have to get to and address. But that's
also
a whole separate
also
thing.
Maybe one of the first letters we ever got. Uh-huh. We still haven't addressed it.
I know.
Oh, that's
pretty
cool.
From Carly's.
Time capsule it.
I know.
I tell you what, that's a great question.
I love
that it isn't just stuck creatively. Let's chill right into creatively. You're stuck creatively. You just feel like you're not in the zone. Because I think we would all agree that people, I think, assume, at least let's talk about comedy alone.
Sure.
People are like, oh, yeah, you're in a rut, so you're not sitting down and writing down ideas. But that's not really the place. The rut or like getting stuck, I think, is the frame of mind. It's just your mindset where you're not enjoying what you're saying. You're not enjoying what you're doing. It's not about writing more stuff or new stuff or different stuff. It's just about getting back to having fun doing it again. Yeah. So I will say for me personally, there's shows where I will either be high on a show or not high on a show.
Yeah.
Those aren't always solutions. Sometimes being high was the wrong choice and being sober I would have had more fun.
Yeah.
But sometimes if I'm stuck, I'll wonder, am I going up high all the time? Am I going up sober all the time?
Yep.
And then I kind of mix it up to try to, I mean, I think pot is specifically a medication towards pulling yourself out of some creative ruts.
Sure.
It's not always the solution, but so that's what I'll do sometimes for creatively to pull myself out.
You'll alter your mind.
I think so, yeah. I think that's what I try to do. Try to shift it, get into a new frame of mind, or I think I just step back and figure out how I'm doing what I'm doing.
Uh-huh.
I can't change necessarily the words or the jokes so quickly.
Right.
Yeah.
So I step back and go, oh, I should do it this way. A lot of characters I've done on stage were born out of wanting to do, like,
just do
change
different.
The how.
Yeah, yeah.
Not the what.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Reggie?
If I get stuck, yeah, I mean, I use a kind of a similar technique in anything. Like, if I'm stuck on a decision or whatever, I like to think of it as taking advantage of the window of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, there's always a moment when you instinctively knew what to do, but then you doubted it, and then when you doubted it, like, that window closed.
Yeah.
You know? So I try to recreate that again, or I'll force it just by making a decision. I'll just say, like, just do this. And as long as, because the thing is, you know what they say in, like, special forces or, like, the army military, they're always like, keep moving. Like,
you know,
if you're in a situation, you know, in a battle or whatever, it's like, you have to keep moving. And so it's the same thing for me if I'm stuck, especially on stage. I feel like, oh, I'm doing too much of this. I recognize a pattern because I don't want to recognize a pattern. I want to be riding the wave.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So I'll do something totally crazy. I'll just be like, oh, fuck it. I'll just go backstage with the mic and do something for a long time.
Yeah.
You know? And then that will be like, oh, shit, I know what to do. And then I come back. Whatever. Just something to break. You just got to break it. Break
it's
yourself.
It's like kind of shocking yourself out of the pattern.
Roy, didn't you tell me once you did a... You did a show in a hotel, and you went up the elevator and did the show.
I went up
an
elevator.
Oh, that's rad!
I went up, it was you were like in a lobby, right?
It was in a lobby where it was like I don't know, 12 floors. But you know the lobby where you see all the way to the top, and the rooms are around the lobby.
Yeah, so you could get
like
the reception
courtyard lobby,
which I didn't know. I didn't think about the reception. I just had a wireless mic, and I was like, let's go walk around. And so I got in the elevator, and luckily it kept working.
Oh,
I went up
God.
To like the sixth floor, kept talking. Some families were like walking around. I was like talking to them. Then I came back down. Some people were going into a room. I went into their room with them, which they were okay with. And I came out of the connecting room because they had two rooms together.
What?
Like I did a magic trick.
That's amazing.
And then I got back on stage and you can hear the manager of the hotel off stage go, please don't do that anymore. And I go, oh, you saw that? This booming voice over the entire. Oh, you noticed? You noticed that I did that?
Yeah.
Doing stuff like that is what I prefer. I prefer those like, kind of moments.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great way of like just like, well, I'm. What if I just change?
Yeah,
this?
Yeah. Because then it's not the bits. You're not doing any bits. It's not right, the jokes.
Yeah, you're changing your energy.
The thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want, you don't want crutch energy.
For me, it's like when I think creatively, like I also think about writing, and I can get through a rut by shutting everything else down, which I know isn't always feasible for myself and isn't feasible for necessarily every person who hears these words. Mm-hmm. But I literally, if I can be like, you know what, for 2 or 3 days, I'm going to take some time to do nothing but this writing. And I'm not even going to put pressure on it being good. I'm just going to put pressure on like putting it out, just putting it up. But don't even worry about it. And it helps me because I'm very good at multitasking just things I have to do in my life. I'm not good at multitasking creatively. Like, I almost need to be very specific about my time for that. Like, I can't be like, all right, I'll go to the gym for 2 hours, and then I'll write for an hour and a half, and I'll do it. That hour and a half, I won't write. It's too, it's too confined. Forced. Yeah, yeah. And so, what I, here's the thing, though. By taking a chunk of time to be nothing but solely, specifically creative on one thing, I find that the analogy that I even said to somebody this week is that gets me up the mountain, like that gets me started on it, and then I can take an hour on a Tuesday or an hour on Thursday because I'm just adding in to a train that's already in motion.
Yes.
So many analogies at once. But like to me, and you know what I likened it to? I was thinking of you, Rory. Cooking.
Okay.
And a lot of your time in cooking is like prepping something, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And once you've got it done, well, now all you have to do is stir it every once in a while or flip it over a little bit.
Yeah.
And that task is so much easier. It's still part of the process, but it's so much easier than everything that started it.
The prep.
Yeah. So once I've taken a chunk of time to creatively get the process going, then even if I didn't finish it in those 2 or 3 days, it is easier for me to come back and just add a little bit more.
Yeah.
Stir it a little bit, flip it over.
Mm-hmm.
So for my like ruts, I make the sacrifice to take a time. Maybe that's a day, maybe it's 3 days, maybe it's a week if you're lucky enough.
Yeah.
We have friends, I know one of our friends who went for 6 weeks to get a draft done of a book. And they were gone. They lived somewhere for 6 weeks. And that's what, you know, they were able to do that. And that's what it took for them.
Yeah.
That what if I did that all the time?
This show would probably, our ratings would be like, whoa. Like, whoa.
Just so you guys know, I've recorded the shows and I've edited out all of Rory's reactions so you can hear the show the way it's supposed to sound.
I've edited out all the talking except for the huh, 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 huh. And now I cut it into a beat.
The hot new single coming.
But yeah, so I take I'll take time and then I can come back to it more easily.
You know, Kumail,
that's cool, man.
We lived in New York City, I was talking to Kumail about writing and he was like, yeah, just sit down for 20 minutes a day, which is still hard for me to
Very
be like, I'm going to sit down and write for 20 minutes. But he goes, once you sit down for that 20 minutes, you find that it's easily 2 hours. And then you go, oh, I did a lot of writing. He goes, but if you just say it's going to be 20 minutes.
I see.
And just go, I had 20
yourself.
Minutes, I can get up. But then you don't want to get up because you remember, oh, yeah, I like doing this.
Right? Yeah.
And if it's
sitting and writing anything is wired into my brain to be homework, and I'm immediately turned off by it, even when it's my passion.
Yep, me too.
Yeah.
And you know what that good thing about that idea is if it is a day where nothing's coming, you just get up in 20 minutes.
Well, let me throw this out there.
Yeah.
Because the letter also was talking about overcoming being stuck geographically or financially.
Right.
Oh,
maybe those are just two other examples of being stuck. Maybe there's other ones. But
yeah.
I don't really know what to say about the financial one because I feel like, at least in what we do, we're all just kind of like, it's not like we have this like, this is your job and this is what you go do. It's like different gigs popping up.
Yeah.
And so the financial is like up and down anyways, but geographically intrigues me greatly as three people who travel a lot for our jobs. I don't know that I don't know that I feel stuck geographically too much because the nature of us going and making money allows us to
it's
escape.
It's so true. Like when somebody says to me, like, how do you like LA? I like it a lot, but I get to travel. They're like, oh, you ever miss home? I'm like, actually, no, because I get to
travel.
Yeah, I get to
appreciate it.
Yeah, or like luckily shows in Chicago or Madison pop up enough that I'm like, I'll just stay a couple extra days. So I don't identify with that at all, but I also value it. I appreciate it at the same time. I don't know. If you were stuck somewhere geographically, I think the thing is for people us, we went to where we had to go to do our thing.
Yeah,
right?
When you where did you first move when you were like?
Well, I started out in beautiful Rochelle, Illinois.
Okay.
Then moved to Chicago.
At what age?
College.
I think it's Chicago. College. But okay.
Is it?
It is Chicago or Chi Chi.
Yeah. No. Wow. Chi Chi or Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah. So Dr. Chicago.
I'm in Chi Chi for a while and then just came straight out here from Chicago.
Yeah. So you had like a sense that you needed to go somewhere else. So
it's hard for me to identify with somebody who feels geographically stuck because I'm like, just go.
Yes. I mean, I think like maybe if that's where they're coming from. I know for me, you know, I was growing up in Montana and I got age 18. And you can't really, I mean, I could have gone to the College of Great Falls, but I'm not going to do that. Right. And I loved music and, you know, seeing like MTV and all these crazy locations. And I just knew that I had to move to the next biggest city. That was Seattle.
What age was that when you were like, this town isn't big enough for me?
I'd say like I started feeling it at 17.
That you just
18.
Had, you want to do something that just wasn't here.
Yeah, I knew that like there just wasn't the stuff that I wanted to see in town. It wasn't there.
Right.
Which is actually kind of cool. I mean, I like growing up in a town. The smaller town thing is kind of fun to do because you kind of know if you've got plans to do bigger things that you're going to move from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And of course, I got some friends who are like, man, I'm going to move, man. And they're like still there, which isn't, I don't want to say it's a bad thing. I'd say it's only bad if they think it's bad.
Sure. I agree.
But, you know, a lot of times, like younger kids, if I go back to my hometown, they'll be like, hey, how'd you do? And I'm like, just keep having fun. Move to where there's a scene, and then just make friends with people and keep working together and like doing shows and stuff. And it's like I always tell them, it's the easy choice,
right?
The easy choice is just follow your fun.
Yeah, it's also like an instinctual choice.
Yes,
like when people will ask me of any of the decisions I ever made at all, from like deciding to try stand up to where I am now. I don't know. I don't really truly. I can't go back and go, oh, I thought about this and this and this. Like, I remember I bought a flight to D.C. without even really thinking about it. I just knew that there was stand-up in D.C. and my sister lived there. So in my head, it was like, well, then that's where we go. There isn't another option.
You're right.
She's there. There's a couch. I can get a job and I can go do stand-up and learn improv. Like, go there and do that.
Yeah.
And so I did it. And then, you know, it was like, oh, you want to learn improv? Well, then you sign up for improv classes. Oh, right. You want to do stand-up? You go watch all the open mics and you put your name down. Like, you don't think about some other thing. You're just like, well, this is what everyone's doing to do it.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'll do. It's I don't know why.
It's like deep water diving. Like, find your line and then just keep pulling down that line.
Yeah.
And just stay on that because you know you want to go to the end of that. So know what's there. What are you diving towards? And then just keep your hand on that line.
Yeah.
And you'll figure it out. For me, it was weird because right after college, I didn't pursue comedy. I didn't pursue improv. I didn't pursue acting or any of that stuff. And I think it was because of what you guys just both touched on. That idea of that work and doing that thing was too easy, that the easy choice. And I was like, oh, no, work's supposed to be hard. Work, like, I'm comping out on something if I'm not working. Like, that's too easy. And then what I realized eventually was like, oh, no, everybody has something for them that's so easy that they're like, man, I would teach kids every single day for free if I didn't have to worry about bills. I can't believe they pay me to do this. I'd hate to be a lawyer. And then a lawyer would be like, yeah, you know what the crazy part is? I would spend all day finding loopholes for free.
Yes,
I
love
it.
Exactly.
I grant, I'll take all this money, but these idiots, I'd find loopholes for free.
You know.
So you literally need to find the thing that you're like, this seems too easy, and then hopefully get paid to do that thing.
Totally.
Yeah. But
totally.
It's just so for this person, if you're stuck geographically, ask yourself, like, well, what environment or energy or space or type of people, because, you know, there obviously is cultures to certain towns and cities, would make you the most happy that it seems like, well, I can't just do that? Because the answer is you can.
You can't. I know there's a financial element to just get to be picking
it
up.
It might not be easy at
leaving.
First.
Yeah.
It's not easy. It's definitely not easy. But also keep in mind there are an infinite amount of realities that are all happening at the exact same time.
Yep.
And if you're just like this spot that I'm at, you're not going to, you can't change yourself.
Right.
But you can go, all right, well, here I am in Brooklyn, New York. I think I'm just going to go live in a suburb in Georgia.
Yeah.
Like, that's another planet.
Sure. Yes.
You are moving to another planet. And there are millions. There are millions of planets. Now, like I said, it's not easy.
Right.
And sometimes it's not what you want. But maybe you want to go live in a cabin, you know, in Hawaii or Alaska. Like,
yeah.
I'm not saying you can just go do those things, but if you are stuck geographically, know that there's some pretty extreme and way less extreme changes that you can make that, if you work towards them, I think you can make it. And also, I think they're very healthy. I think if you're, like, stuck geographically, that's not really a choice you're making. The universe is telling you, you need to move. You got to get somewhere else. It's you don't have to pay attention to the details. All you got to do is be aware, oh, I'm feeling this way for a reason. So then you got to do something about it.
Right.
Yeah, because the choice is easy. It's not to say it's easy, but the choice is easy.
Right.
The choice is like, oh, you know what? I met a friend, you know, and it's also about culture. It's about who you know.
Mm-hmm.
So take advantage of that. You know, the more social that you are in whatever context nowadays, you can be electronically social, but like, but you know, you're like, oh, I'm coming through, blah, blah, blah. Does anybody, is there a couch I could crash on? Crash on their couch. Someone's friend comes over. Oh, man, there's this cool thing to come to tonight. Oh, yeah, well, let's go there. And you're just kind
of
like yes.
A lot and of can that, I can know? I tell you something? Yeah. That's how Amy Grant got started.
No way.
Yeah, what? I brought it all the way back around.
Well, I love that.
Amy Grant. Wow.
I say
the 2 degrees of Amy Grant.
Welcome back to the 2 degrees of Amy Grant, where we tell podcast. The same story every week.
We'll close this out. I would say that financial thing is the same thing. Just make sacrifices to get to the place you want to be. Like you said, the choice can be easy. The work might not be. But if it's what you really want, the work is worth it.
And also just remember, set a target and move towards the target. And then over time, learn that the journey was the target and the target was not the target.
And you actually...
And also, we're sponsored by Target.
Yeah, that's
and you,
true,
Rory, I think we'll say this last on it, if that's cool. I think that something you talked about one time we watched. Did you watch the Jim and Andy documentary on Netflix?
I did not.
Need to. But badly. Remember, his dad tells him, Rory. He says, "I tried to play it safe and I failed. So you might as well do what you want with your life because
you can fail you can playing fail. It safe too."
Yeah. So just go for find that line and follow it.
Yeah.
All right, that's our second one. I guess we'll take another.
Sincerely, your pen pals,
Daniel Van Kirk.
Oh, and Reggie.
And Roarborg. And we're back.
Hello, everyone.
Hey, folks, we're back.
Thanks for hanging around the break on this special pen pal additional episode. I love it. I love that we're doing this.
Yeah.
We'll probably do it again.
Yeah. Reginald Watsonland is here.
Je suis.
Reggie?
Si, si.
We got one. We're going to go right into it. This one came off of Gmail, which is penpalspod@gmail.com. Let's go to the letters and let's get into it. Here we go, folks. This is coming from Amy. And she writes, "Hey, Daniel and Rory," wrong order, that's fine.
It's not the wrong order.
"My name is Amy, and you can use my name, and we will, Amy. I want to ask about the type of things that worry us in the night. Already so poetic. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about the things that worry us in the night, and those things are infinite.
They are.
When I finally climb into my bed, I've been thinking about all day. Sometimes I can't sleep. Or I wake in the night with this profound sense of dread about death and the afterlife, or lack thereof. It is terrifying. I feel like I am more acutely aware of it in the cover of darkness when all is quiet. Why do you think that is? I feel like every night that my husband is there with me and my young son that still sneaks into our bed in the night are precious and won't last forever, so I hold them tighter. The pain I feel from the thought of us as a family being separated by death is so crippling, it's hard to bear. Do you think the fear lessens as you get older and get used to it, or do you think it gets worse as we get closer to it? Do you guys have this happen to you in the middle of the night? Is that a thing other people do? I am so scared of blank nothingness, and I hate the helpless feeling because there is nothing I can do about it. Sorry to bring up something so deep and depressing, but it weighs on my mind, and I wanted to just put it out there. Thanks for reading. I hope someone writes to you about funny stuff. This is so bad. Your pen pal, Amy." Amy really just want to work it backwards, just going very, very insecure right there at the end, wanting someone to write something funny. Amy, what you don't know is that this is the kind of shit we love.
It is.
Profound existential crisis. Ow! Get out of town.
Welcome back to PEC.
Yeah.
Profound existential crisis. This is a great letter. I love this. I love this because I think this is relevant to so many people.
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely.
Just right out of the gate, when she talks about the nothingness of night, why does this hit her then? I think that's because that's when you're truly... You don't have as much stimulation, mm-hmm. and you're alone with yourself now.
Yep.
And that person who you're talking to, who is you, that's who you're talking to right before you fall asleep about whatever thoughts. And I totally get that they can go so dark. I have the same like fears, the same like scariness of like, what the fuck is any of it? So I love that. Have you guys ever done, I know you've done it because we've gone together, sensory deprivation tanks.
No, oh, hell yeah.
That is an example of being with yourself and really having to be with yourself.
Does that go bad, though, then, sometimes?
It depends who you are. I think it can be great. I think it's a great exercise on being with yourself because that's
just you.
You're rarely
just
in that position where it's like, how do you feel? What's your relationship like with yourself? That's a way to, like, figure it out.
Right.
I'm a big fan of it.
Yeah.
That made me think of it just because... That can be tough being in the sensory deprivation tank. You're naked, the warm water, you're floating, you have the earplugs in, your eyes are closed, you can't see anything.
Really?
You don't have to do anything, you're effortlessly floating.
What if you're claustrophobic?
And it's just you
like
and
me.
Your thoughts. It's not a claustrophobic
not
space,
too...
in my opinion.
No, it's okay. not.
It is like a 7-foot ceiling.
Oh,
and
really?
The water is like 2 feet deep or something like that.
Oh, okay.
So it's not as enclosed as I was. I always thought it was like a casket.
That's
type
what
situation.
I think,
yeah,
too.
Yeah,
not a casket. No. So okay. much space. So yeah. much space.
It's like a king size bed.
You could stand
of
up
water.
At any point and put really? Your hands up and touch. You know.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You have like a lot of space.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and you know that the door is. I mean, you basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
know.
Yeah.
Of course, when you lose yourself, you lose orientation, but it's fine.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I don't know. What do you guys have that when you're about to fall asleep at night? Do you go? Negative, or do you have a thing when you're about to fall asleep? Like, do you have a thing you always do? Like, you go through
yes,
this. Like, for example, when I'm excited, like I will sometimes play a golf course in my head,
Rory.
And I fall asleep pretty quickly.
Really?
Oh, it's the best. I love it.
What
I played
course?
So many courses like that I consistently enough.
What are you, Hannibal?
I'm a little Hannibal.
Have you ever? Do you know that about those books?
No.
Hannibal Lecter creates a castle in his mind, filled. Every room is filled. In the books, it talks about how when he's in the solitary, all that stuff, he just retreats into his own mind and spends his time reading books and doing things in his castle
yeah.
inside, that he's created in his house.
Yeah, power. That's a powerful brain.
Yeah.
No, I just play a golf course. I want to hit the ball here, then I want to hit it here, then I want to do this next hole. And I'm like asleep very quickly.
Really?
But yeah. I also sometimes can't do that. You know, sometimes your thoughts get away from you and you're suddenly thinking deep, dark.
Is it?
Awful
silent
shit.
In your room when you go to bed.
We have a noise machine.
Yeah.
I grew up with a fan like in my face, so I need sound.
You're,
I can't have it be quiet.
One of those guys that's gate checking a box fan at the United.
the late 80s. Yeah, I need this. God. No, I got a noise machine I turn on, one of the domes or whatever they're
uh-huh.
called.
Yeah.
So fantastic.
I have the same
but what about you guys? What's your...
I'll do the same thing where I'm like, I can get into the void
yeah.
of like, what do I need to do today that I didn't do? What do I need to do tomorrow? What am I doing with my life?
Yeah.
Like all of that. Like what are big like thematical things in my life I'm not working on? All that stuff. Someone told me once a good technique for like calming your mind down and falling asleep was pick a color and then think of every animal that color.
Yeah.
And sometimes that work, I'll expand that out to like food that's that color. So that's like an exercise. But my main routine is I listen to a radio show based out of Chicago. It's an overnight radio show called, it's hosted by a guy named Nick DiGilio. It's the Nick DiGilio show on WGN 720.
Nicky 720. D. Welcome back to Nicky
WGN
D.
WGN 720 AM, the dial, the mothership. and I, what they do is they podcast.
Mothership.
They podcast that. Radio show in segments, like topics.
Okay.
And
okay.
so it'll be like, oh, the craziest, you know, like space stories or whatever it is. And it's generally pop culture and it's very light.
Yeah.
And so I listen to that on Tuesday night. They will have dropped already Monday night's show.
Yeah,
so it's
yeah.
kind of like a night. It has a nighttime feeling show to it.
Yeah.
They know that it's the middle of the night. And all of their reference points are the fact that it's the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And I listen to that. And it really, you know, I on the app, the I podcast app, you can set like turn off in 50 minutes or 15, ooh, I like 30, that. 45,
oh, that's so smart.
Or
yeah.
when episode
so
ends.
I have it just going on forever.
Yeah, and so I'll set it for anywhere from 30 minutes to when episode ends, and that's how every night I kind of will like, I'll go to sleep with that. And it helps me not think about anything else than whatever
yeah.
fun, mundane topic there.
Sure.
They're, I guess that's a, those don't work together, fun and mundane, but just
fun, light, fundane podcast. Yeah.
Fundane's got to be a website. Fundane.com.
It's fun mundanity.
Yeah. And I also, if not that, I need sound.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can't sit there in silence.
I can't have the silence.
Because the sound will start in my head.
It's too loud. The silence is too loud. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. It's if you, I wear earplugs to sleep.
Really?
Yeah.
Because you're a light sleeper?
No, not at all. I just kind of think, like, I just want to maximize no interruptions.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I will say, you know, you're saying that you need to listen to noise.
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
You know, but the weird thing is that there's no such thing as true silence. You know,
right.
So if you've ever gone into an anechoic chamber, it's where they test microphones and stuff. It's a fully dead room. And
people go crazy in there, don't they?
They go crazy because because it's a big room. So visually, you see a big room.
Yeah.
You're standing on a mesh floor that's suspended. So it's midway. So it's a room that when you walk into it, you're walking into the halfway height of it.
Uh-huh.
And, or height of it. And then you just kind of like stand in the middle and you get no reference of sound at all. So it's completely disorienting. I mean, it's
And you can like
weird.
Hear That's your body, right?
Yeah, you can hear your
really?
Body.
Really?
Yeah. Yes.
I was going to ask, could you hear like your fingers rub together?
Apparently you can hear like your organs. You can like hear your heartbeat.
Yeah,
like,
if you really wanted to, you could. Yeah. But the thing is, I noticed is that there's always a little
There's
kind
something.
Of sound. There's always a little white noise already happening.
Really?
So when I put in earplugs, I notice that there's white noise already from my brain happening.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So some people don't like the feeling of being cut off because they're like, what if someone came in? You know, and then they start thinking about that.
Yeah.
And they start freaking out. I don't know. I don't really worry about that so much. But you know, I don't know, the existential crisis of thinking like, oh, what happened? You know, I'm getting older and people are going to die and I'm not going to, and what is nothingness? And if I'm to die and just cease to exist, then why am I even here aware of myself? You know, like these kinds of like cyclical thoughts. I don't know. I just think of it as like, it's definitely, you're just like grooving on a wave and that life is really big and that you have to be open to whatever comes your way. Because that's where living is. Otherwise, you start to go into a fear mode, and then you create too much preciousness around things, and then you're trying to hold on to everything so tight because you're like, oh, I don't want to lose this, I want to lose this, I want to lose this, and I better take this moment. All of that stuff. It's more like, can you ride the wave of whatever's happening and still be super appreciative of your family, you know, your offspring, all that stuff. And you're just riding that wave, but you're also aware that life is really big and you don't have to worry about what's going to happen because what's going to happen is going to happen.
Because that's the difference, right? You're like, you're not living in this moment. You're living in fear of future moments that may or may not come.
Somebody also, you live in fear of those future moments, and then when they happen, because some of them are bound to, you then go, see, I was right. And it's like, yeah, but you were right about literally saying, I bet you $1 million the number 7 follows in the number 6. And it's like, well, it does. So when they get to 6, they go 7, they go, see, I was right. It's like, that was going to happen. You can't. Yeah.
So I heard somebody say once, worry is paying a debt that may never be owed.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
But that was your dog.
I think it was a guy named Jay Lorette who eats chicken bones.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. But what about the part in there where Amy says, do you think the fear lessens as you get older and get used to it, or do you think it gets worse as we get closer to it?
Here's what I think. I think it's very much in the vein of what you're saying. I think it's just you cope with it through your philosophical outlook of what you believe this experience to be. Mm-hmm. I think I relate to all that she's saying, and I totally understand what you're talking about and how you have to like view it, because I struggle with this all the time to go, oh, I also agree we can't hold on too tightly, but then you go, but then how do I less, how do, like, I mean, especially it's gotten worse for me now that I have my daughter. Like it's, you see the progress of a life in just 3 years. I'm like, where did those 3 years go? Like, I think about it all the time. Like, how do I keep these precious moments? Because it's flying at such a pace that you're like, oh, my God, I want you to slow down. And if I go on the road, I come back after a week or two,
she's not even the same person because at such a young age, their brains grow so rapidly. They're downloading so much information.
Like you'll hear her even just structure a sentence differently than she did a week ago.
Or her voice changes slightly, or she's a little bit taller, and you start to look back and go,
trippy.
I tell everybody that just had a baby, I'm like, enjoy that infancy. I know a lot of people say that. Enjoy the infancy, despite the fact you're going the craziest because you're not sleeping, and it's 6 months of insanity, and they're just crying, and it's you don't know what's going on. You're fearful you're not doing anything right, and you're screwing them up psychologically somehow.
Right.
And then when it's gone, you're like, oh, I wish I would have embraced that more. But instead, it was so hard that I didn't realize that when that ends, it's gone. You're not getting it back. And then, you know, I even tell people, like, when your kid's little, like, if they're like, hold me, like, hold them. Because there'll be an age where you can't, and there'll be an age where they don't want you to.
Right.
Yeah. And then you'll go, God, I wish every time. As opposed to, hey, you're big, I'm not going to hold you now. It's like, anytime my daughter says hold me, I hold her instantly. Because that day will end. She's not going to be 20 going, and my dad still holds me because he never told me no.
Right.
But those little things that maybe she's talking about, like I also live in that fear of like death. My mother passed away when I was very young. So
I was
going to
ask
like,
you, we talked about it before, but I was like, you kind of were born into like, you better precious these moments.
Exactly. I'm born into like the reality that that can
go away.
Happen. Like, that death is real. Like, I think there's a lot of people who maybe get into their late 20s before maybe a grandparent dies, and maybe that's first person who was close in their life, that if they're so fortunate to not experience some other tragedy, to be like, oh my God, that's so crazy to now cope with this person being gone. Like, that occurred to me too when my grandparents passed away. I was like, oh, my mom died at such a young age, and yet here I am for the first time experiencing what it's like to lose someone I knew, and you know, in such a different way. But I relate to that. You live in this fear of losing people, but then it goes back to exactly what you just said, where it's like, you're going to lose them.
Right.
There's nothing you can do to save yourself or them. Time is just time, and it's going to happen.
I think that maybe is a benefit of something, not everybody, but there's an opportunity there to have learned that by having lost something earlier or whatever, because you can say to yourself, like, my grandfather was my father figure. That was what I had. And at 6 and a half, he died. And I remember being with all the other grandkids who were all younger than me, and they wanted to take us to get, like, milkshakes. And I was sitting there being like, how can we get milkshakes when down the street, like, they're having the wake?
Right.
Because I was taking it like an adult. And this was kind of before the edge of people really being able to identify trauma in kids for loss. Like, they have their own level that's really fucking them up right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I think that what that did was it helped me in some ways. I still have like some fears of loss. But what it did help me is I've been on the other side of the loss and know that there's nothing there. So rather than worry about when that happens and you'll get nothing out of it, try to just be like, well, I'm here in this right now, so I have to value this. Because, yes, I can worry about the day that person dies, but I know that every day after that is nothingness. So you kind of have to be like, pick them up right now. And that helps you in that moment rather than be like, pick them up right now and be like, what about when I can't pick them up? Settle down.
Just pick them up right now.
It's quality. I mean, it's really about quality of time spent. You know, and it's way more, because my mom is by herself. My dad passed away 14 years ago, and my mom lives by herself in the same house I grew up in, Montana. And I try to go see, I started 2 years ago, I started saying, or I said to myself, I'm going to try to see her once a month. So I try to, you know, for the most part, I go once a month, even if it's just 3 days.
Yeah.
And I just want to learn as much as I can from my mom, because I know she's like getting older and she's her health is failing a bit, and I want to enjoy that. And there are lots of moments where I kind of project what it would feel like to lose her, because she's really the last person in my family that I'm close to. That's it. So when that happens, so I'll project a little bit, and I try to make it softer, you know, like the way I project it when she leaves. I like to say that when that does happen, I would have spent a lot of quality time with her, and that I really made an effort, and that if I was mad, I always say like, hey, I'm sorry for blah blah blah, and I love you. Just say I love you as much as I can.
The
more that I can do that and kind of let go of that, because some in some ways I'm still in my 20s, like, oh, mom, I don't want to, no, I'm going to go by myself and my friends down to the, you know, whatever. I still have a little bit of that.
Sure.
But I'm trying to get rid of that so that I can see her more as a, in a way, like as a friend.
Yeah, right.
And because she's a really wise person and has gone through a lot of experience. So for me, it's about getting the quality out of it, but not feeling like, I got to get all of it now. It's more like,
It's a tightrope, right?
Right.
I want to prepare myself so that I'm not like fucking, you know, punched in the fucking face out of nowhere by it and be like, no, you know, I don't want it to be like that. I just want it to be a process.
Yeah. And you also then also wonder like the scales of, you know, being present for somebody, but then going, well, I also have to live my own life. I also have to leave the nest and this other thing. I think it a lot because I'm very far away from my family, which I don't see very often. And you just kind of are like, you look at it like, well, this is animals. This is what they do. You leave.
Biology.
And that's, this is how it goes. I mean, there's people who stay, like in Rochelle, like there's or at least what I picture of Rochelle to be, there's people who stay and I have it in my hometown, like people who have the same friends that they grew up with, and they'll probably die next to.
Yes.
And that's, you know, its own form of living. And there's parts of me that is happy with what I have, and then I'm like jealous of what someone else has. But then you're just like, I don't know. This kind of goes back a little bit to the other letter, too, where it's like, if you are following this passion and you are just kind of going deep sea diving.
Following that line.
You can't wonder what's going on the other line. You got to stick to yours because it's what you want to do. It's in the grand scheme of things, there's nothing right or wrong about it. I think to, in some simple way, try to answer Amy's question here is that, yes, I think what you're experiencing is something a lot of people experience. And I think the only way to cope with it is to figure out how to mentally create a philosophy about around what you think you're experiencing and how to deal with it, because these are very broad fears that everyone has and thinks about. And I know a lot of parents who think about it too. When your kid climbs a bed, you know those days are going to be over. It goes back to what you're saying. How do you cherish it now? Because there's nothing you can do about it. It's tough.
Well, and one final thing I'll say is that it's the resolution. Like, the more that you relax and open yourself up to an experience, the more resolution you're experiencing. Mm-hmm. Therefore, that you have a higher richness There's an ease that comes with re-experiencing things when you've actually paid attention to the micro details.
Yeah,
right. You know? So in a way, like, the more that you increase your quality of experience in general, the more you can, I mean, in a way, kind of time travel. You can time travel and you can feel that feeling and you're like, oh, yeah, because I was there.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to, like,
you took in all the elements around it.
Yeah.
You make a very vivid memory.
Yeah, because otherwise fear, it's like riding a train and you're not paying, you know, you're like texting when there's the most beautiful countryside in the world. It's what was that like going on that train ride? I guess it was the same as me taking an Uber.
As not taking the train.
Yeah.
As not going anywhere at all.
Yeah.
Very true.
Awesome.
Good letter. That was a great letter. And thank you, Reggie, for joining us today.
Yeah, my pleasure, man.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you, everybody who listened today. Hit us up on the Pen Pals Pod on Instagram and Twitter. You
can Gmail.
You can find the Gmail at thepenpalspod@gmail.com. Sincerely, Daniel Van Kirk,
Rory Scovel, and our first guest ever,
Reggie Watts.
Show.